Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week, Professor Jacqueline Font-Gussman of the Werner Institute for Negotiation and Dispute Resolution at Creighton University speaks with Counselor Audio Source contributing editor Dr. Teresa O'Halloran regarding mediation principles and practices.
Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. This is Dr. Teresa O'Halloran. And today here we have Professor Jacqueline Font-Gussman from the Werner Institute for Negotiation and Dispute Resolution at Creighton University. Glad to have Jacqueline here today to talk to us about mediation. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So first, let's hear from you about who you are and how you got interested in mediation.
Sure. I actually relocated from Puerto Rico in February to come here and accept the position of the Werner Institute as an associate director and professor teaching conflict resolution courses. Basically, I was fascinated with the project that's going on here. It's a new program, you know, master's certificate program as well. And all, you know, every time there's something new, there's an opportunity to engage in creativity. And that's always something I really enjoy. So it was an opportunity of a lifetime. In terms of my interest and background, my base profession, I guess, is healthcare administration, and I did that for a while. And then I decided to go into law school and practice law for probably approximately 10 years. And while doing that, I came across mediation. And it all began with a training I took, actually, a workshop that the Postal Service in Puerto Rico was offering. They have a big nationwide program for mediation. And I did that, and I became a mediator for them. And it just opened a totally new perspective on how we could engage into conflict in a more positive way. So just one thing led to another, and I think that's where I eventually became engaged with the mediation and conflict resolution field.
Great. Well, let's begin with that then. What exactly is mediation? How would you define it?
It's interesting you mentioned that because there's not a uniform definition of mediation. Throughout, as the profession has been developing, there have been different models of mediation that have been, people have come up with theories and different mediation approaches. And I guess the most popular and common definition of mediation would be a facilitated negotiation. Two or more people are having a difficulty in terms of achieving a solution to what they perceive to be a problem, and they're not able to do it by themselves, and then a third person comes in and try to facilitate that negotiation. And that is basically the most common definition. Other methods and other theories focus more on supporting people's decision to just have a conversation and not necessarily focus on a resolution. And then others types, and that would be called like a transformative mediation concept, and they define it more as just assisting the parties and empowering them and recognizing so that each other can just have a conversation and you support that decision process, and in that way it's not so centered towards a resolution, like, you know, we're going to solve this problem. And there's another model, which is narrative, which is takes a lot from the psychology and counseling, the narrative therapy. So they take a little bit of those concepts, and for them it's more about social action and deconstruction of language and going at it that way. So, I mean, there's different definitions and different goals depending on the theory you subscribe to. However, I think that what they all have in common is just basically trying to assist parties to engage conflict in a more productive manner. And that may very well be it, you know, just getting a resolution, or it may just be having a constructive conversation, or it may just be seeing things from a different perspective, but they all have that one common theme, trying to assist parties to achieve that.
Great. Well, what are some of the traditional uses of mediation?
It's been used in all kind of settings. It's been used community mediation, which is more issues that community members have and they want to resolve, and so they go through mediation. And there's a big field on employment and employment issues where they're being mediated. For example, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has a nationwide program. They're mediating all their EOC claims, and it's mandatory for agencies that are federal agencies to actually have available for employees the possibility of going through mediation if they believe they have a claim under EOC. Of course, it's voluntary, and if that doesn't work, you still have your right to go to court and do whatever you think needs to be done. So that's a big area. It's being used a lot in family mediation, divorce, more gears usually towards trying to protect minors when there's a divorce and trying to, in a constructive way, sit down and figure out what the custody issues are going to be and those type of settings or divisions of assets. So it's being used in that field also. Big time, it's being used also in the international level for conflict resolution. In Africa, for example, the post-colonial conflicts that are going through right now, that they're going through right now, mediation is a big component that has been used to do that. Healthcare is another big issue. For example, we're using conflict resolution and mediation being part of that to address issues of patient safety. And meaning instead of going and filing a lawsuit because there has been some sort of malpractice committed either on yourself or a family member, try to team with the members of physicians, nursing staff, healthcare professionals to prevent this from happening again. And what they've discovered is through all the skills that are used in conflict resolution, you can accomplish that in a more productive way as opposed to just the traditional litigation. Bioethics issues are being mediated as well. There's programs in New York, there's a program in many other places in the states where they're working with that. So it's really, we can sit here and talk, and I could pretty much anything you can think of. There's conflict everywhere. So pretty much any place where there's conflict, there's a possibility to use mediation as an alternative to address the conflict. So.
It is very broad, and certainly, as you said, on the international scene right now, there's mediation going on.
There's a lot of mediation going on, which has evolved throughout the years, actually. It used to be just a shuttle diplomacy kind of mediation. Now it's just evolved significantly. Many new exciting things are happening, even post, like, genocide. You have Africa, the Reconciliation and Truth Commission, where they're trying to mend all the damage that the atrocities they have gone through have caused. So it's really an area that you can do so much with it. In pretty much any place you can think of it, there's conflict, and you can use the skills, mediation and conflict resolution, to address them in a more positive way.
And I wanted to go back for just a moment to your first one. Your first example was community mediation.
Yes.
Would you say some more about that?
Sure. Usually they have to do a lot with, for example, problems between neighbors. That's usually a classical one. Issues with, your fence is on my side of the yard. So it could go as something as simple as that. It could be a lot of the communities are getting together to use it as social action, actually, and mediate, if you want to, with government or municipalities. To accomplish things they think they need to accomplish for their community. And there's a lot of that going on in the States. There's for example, in Venezuela, there's a big movement where they have actually sort of like a grassroots kind of movement. And so they have developed their own contracts and the way within communities, and then the way they implement that is through, if there's an issue or a difficulty or someone is not compliant with something, they actually go to a mediation. So it's in a way, sort of like many have mentioned, is the privatization of justice. Privatizing justice. It takes so long to go through the court system that it just seems to make more sense to just do it, like, I guess, the old-fashioned way. Let's sit down and talk.
Huh. So, wonderful. Yeah. So that sounds like one of the benefits of
Definitely.
Mediation
that
is that it's a time saver, it's more efficient.
It is a time saver. Also, I think it doesn't take that much of a toll on relationships. People are able to maybe agree to disagree, but you don't hurt the other person as much in the mediation process. And there might be some difficult situations and some strong things that are being said, but you still have control over the process. I mean, you still have, it's not someone telling you what you need to do. It's not someone telling you, so this is my order or this is what's going to happen. It's more really people taking responsibility for their own actions because they're the ones that are crafting their own solutions to their problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of the blaming since you are the person actually in charge. And that is kind of scary for some people. I mean, some people would just rather go to the court or go to some other, you know, administrative judge or just go to someone to tell them what to do. I mean, some people would rather do that. But it's, I think on the long run, one of the benefits is you're really in control of your own decisions if that's what you want to do. And they're usually decisions that are significant. I mean, like in child rearing, you know, like custody issues, even community issues. I mean, it's your neighbor. Unless one of you moves, you're going to have to deal with him as long as you're there and he or her is there. So it just seems to be a lot less stressful to actually do it, you know, go through the mediation process, even though it's not without stresses, of course. I mean, you will still have stress.
Mm-hmm. And so there's more, one of the things you're saying is there's more give and take in mediation than there might be if you went to the court and had the judge decide.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think you're really in control of what you're putting together, of what you're agreeing to. No one is really telling you how to do it. And there's an opportunity to be creative as well. I think sometimes people go to the court system having a sense that this is going to solve all my problems. And the truth of the matter is that there's a big limitation as to what the judge can do in terms of remedies. I mean, usually the law provides for it, and it's usually a money issue at the end of the day. So there was a malpractice. We're really sorry, you know, so they amputated the wrong arm. So how much is your arm worth? I mean, basically, that's really all they can do within the, I mean, that would be the remedy. And in some cases, then if you go through the process of having maybe a license removed or something like that. As to with mediation, what we find is that people are able to go beyond that. Okay, so you still need to repair, there's still a damage, you still need to, I mean, somehow address the issue, but it gives a big space for apologies, a big space for forgiveness, potentially even reconciliation. There's a space for that to begin to happen or happen. There's a space for being creative in the sense, well, maybe I don't want, you know, the $500,000, but maybe you can have, in the case of the malpractice area, maybe you can have your physician go to continuous education as part of our agreement. Or maybe you can have him not do this procedure, or maybe you can have him change the policy and procedure. Sometimes it's not the particular individual. Sometimes there's system issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the court will never be able to address, and this is applicable in the employment setting as well, are systems issues. Because he can't do anything with the system. As to with mediation, part of your agreements could be, well, let's look into this procedure. How is it being done? Is there a way of doing it better? So you really have a lot of options to be creative and look at things from a different perspective as opposed to just, you know, the remedy provided within a legal framework.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really big advantage, not only for the individuals, but I think for society as a whole. I mean, we can really improve things, which is what we, at the end of the day, really want to do. And I think part of the frustration with the court system is that we go there with expectations that this will happen, that we will be able to remedy some system problems, or we'll be able to, and the court is not there for that. And they can't. I mean, it's not their job.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to it, it's not really what they're there for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So many, many benefits, and some of them that you just described are really psycho-emotional, or really the kinds of yes. things that counselors would hope to have happen in a family. Or
it's a big component of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
There's a what you find in mediation is interesting because I think it's the truly interdisciplinary profession, mediation and conflict resolution as a whole. Because we do draw from sociological theories, for example, of conflict. We do draw from psychology theories as well. We draw from the business section in terms of like how do systems operate. We draw from cultural issues, which is a big field for anthropologists. So what you see is all of that coming together and saying, so how do we put all of this together to be able to really be effective in dealing with conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a truly interdisciplinary, which I think is one of the things that attracts me to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So, how about if you gave us an example of maybe a family with custody issues that give us an example that would describe how the process would begin and what it might look like. Like, how does a mediator enter the family challenge?
Right. And that actually, again, is going to depend on your model, your theoretical framework. If it's a court-annexed mediation program, if it's a freestanding, you know, mediator, just people are going there and it's a private practice kind mm-hmm. of thing. But I would say generically overall, in the family area, what is being used a lot is if it's the case that is being referred. Actually, Omaha has the district here in Douglas County has a mandatory mediation process for people that are getting a divorce, parties that are divorcing, have kids, they have to go through mediation to settle their custody issues. So what the mediator does is tries to help these parents, I mean, who usually they do want the best for their children, it's just that they're so tangled into all the emotion and the loss and the grief. I mean, even those who do want to get a divorce, there's always a sense of loss, and it just takes some people longer to recognize that than others. How do we address then not the emotional issues, because it's not, you're not going to do counseling within the mediation framework. I'm not there as a mediator to deal what your emotional internal issues are as to how to deal with those type of situations. What I'm there for is to assist you with what your goal would be in this particular setting. What are going to be my custody, visitation rights? How are we going to deal with that, for example? So that's where you're trying to have the parties work through their emotion, not ignore their emotions, but help them focus on what this particular goal is. And so you help them craft the visitation rights based on what their needs could be, their interests are, the kids' interests are. So what you're trying to do is structure this for them.
Mm-hmm.
What you find in family mediations and even employment mediations, healthcare mediations, all of them is people, the reason they're there in the first place is because their level of anxiety and stress and emotion is so high, they can't do it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the third party comes in as a mediator. If you're successful in doing it by yourself, then that's fine. But sometimes when you're going through so much emotional turmoil, you really don't think straight.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a mediator, I cannot go into your deep psychological needs because that's not what I'm there for, but I can at least with my skills be able to, for you to be able to craft a solution to what this immediate problem is. I mean, deeper issues, you would then have to go to a counselor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. I mean, it's going to depend on what it is and mm-hmm. the level. And you know, there's a lot of, like I say, sometimes people say, well, you know, people are difficult. And I say, well, there's also a lot of people out there that have, you know, borderline personalities. And it's like, we can't do anything with those people as mediators. What we can do is help people work with those kind of individuals. But we're not going to be able to solve your borderline mm-hmm. personality issue or, you know, whatever other psychological problems or issues mm-hmm. these people might have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the difference, I think, comes into, because many people confuse one thing with the other. And
mm-hmm.
it's like,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, you're just being therapeutical. And I said, well, no, only to the extent that talking helps them feel better, but that's not our goal.
Mm-hmm. So rather than going into the individual's concerns or emotional states, you're
right.
focusing on the problem or the concern at hand and how the two people,
right.
what the two people want?
Well, it's going to depend again. It could be what the people want in terms of their interests. Sometimes what they want is not what's best for them. So you do a lot of reality checklist. You know, what are the consequences of this? Because that's usually what people cannot do when they're having high emotional stress. Your judgment is usually impaired because you're going through so much stress, you can't really think clearly. And for someone who is not going through the emotion, it's really difficult to understand sometimes. And I'm sure as a counselor, you're understand what I'm saying. But for people who don't have any type of training, well, you know, what do you mean? You just can't decide. You know, well, it's a simple decision, but if I'm going through all this turmoil, I can. So you sort of, in that sense, help them guide through the process. So what happens if you do this? So mm-hmm. what happens if, you know, so what are going to be the implications a week from now, a month from now? So you actually, what you're doing is you're assisting them through the thought process. Mm-hmm. And there's always space to consult with attorneys. There's always space to consult. I mean, this is not like, well, you have to decide now and you have to sign. So there's a lot of space for that emotional. You deal with emotion, and there's a lot of, and again, there's several mediation styles. Some people, and I think that's decreasing now, but some mediators say, well, we can't deal with emotion. You have to be rational. You have to be, you know, let's just put emotion on the side and deal with the problem. And actually, the problem-solving methodology comes from a very positivistic, in terms of philosophical view, which there are some assumptions built in, and one of them is that. And so, and it might work a little bit better in some cultural settings than other, but the bottom line is that mediators have discovered that you can't really ignore emotions. So mm-hmm. you have to some extent, allow for that space, but then depending on how deep or how, you know, how much it's affecting, you might just have to stop the mediation. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's just people really need some sort of psychological help. Mm-hmm. And then it comes to the point that not even the mediator skills will help them go through this process. They need a lot more. They're not ready for the mediation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the big things that gets ignored also in mediation. How do we select the case to go to mediation? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is it to be, is the case ready and appropriate for the mediation setting? Because it might not be. I mean, it just really might not be. People might even be going through therapy, you know, mm-hmm. and so it might not be a good timing, or it could be good timing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of issues that one needs to consider, like the pre-screening, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. Is this really the case? I mean, are you really ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This is what I have to offer. Is this something you want?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that going on also.
Right, right. So in a family mediation case, then let's say the judge requires it, as they do in this district, and the two parents meet with the mediator. Mm-hmm. Would they start meeting together or individually with the mediator?
It's also a call that the mediator would have to make. There are such things as mediations that are structured through what they call caucuses or separate meetings. It happens also in domestic violence cases where you don't feel comfortable or it's not appropriate to be in front of the person that has been, I mean, committing all this acts of aggression against you. And so there is the possibility, even within a regular setting, to do it in separate rooms if that's what works best. Or there's a possibility of just doing it together and at certain points in time separating each party, addressing particular emotional issues or just issues that they want to keep private, mm-hmm. but that they need to talk it out in order to make their decision, and then you can reconvene again as a group. So you really, I mean, one of the beauties of mediation is that it's so unstructured, that you can really adapt the process to what you as a mediator think might work best or the parties think might work best.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really have all the flexibility in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to depend. And then each person has their own, I mean, everyone is, you know, different, so what might work in one case might not work in another case. So mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. one of the...
And then the, so between the three of you, let's say there's just three,
uh-huh.
You help to craft a decision or a solution, mm-hmm. and then I believe some of them are binding and some aren't. How does that work?
It would be binding. Normally when you agree to something, I mean, you have a contract, actually. It becomes a contract. So if it's signed and of course the person is, you know, mentally capacitated and of legal age, and, you know, it's whatever the rules of the state are in terms of legal majority and their ability to contract, then one is signed. You're bind. I mean, you have to comply with whatever you've agreed to. And yeah, in fact, if there is someone does not comply, there's the possibility of actually going to court and enforcing that. So there's always that avenue. My experience is when people, and there's actually a lot of, I think her name is Bernard Trinal Sampler. She's from Spain. She's a psychologist who is an attorney who is also a mediator. She has done a lot of research with actually mediators working within the family setting. And her statistics reflect two very interesting things. When attorneys craft the mediation and the agreement, and they reach the agreement, they actually reach agreement in about 46% of the cases, almost 0.5%, which is not bad. When the mediators, I mean, when it's done through the mediation, they usually achieve like 85%. In 85% of the cases, there's actually some sort of agreement. But what's even more interesting is that when the agreement is done through an attorney with the regular, you know, just usual attorney-client relationship, we're going to do this, and there's not a mediation process, like 70% or more of the agreements are broken.
Oh.
With the mediator, it's the inverse. Almost 90-something% of the agreements are actually people actually comply with them. And part of the whole, and she enters into a lot of analysis, and part of the reason is because no one is telling you what to do. I mean, basically, this is something that you have put together, and you feel that you need to comply with what you have decided. And mm-hmm. so it's not someone else imposing on you. So that seems to have a big psychological effect. There's been some research being done on that, and I think that's another one, I guess, of the advantages.
Sure, sure. There's more buy-in mm-hmm. for both parties right. to follow through. I think you've mentioned a few. We talked about the benefits. There's mm-hmm. quite a few. And what are some of the inherent challenges in the mediation
yeah,
process?
Well, there's always challenges in everything. I think one of them is like I said, you need to really decide if the case is appropriate for mediation. Second, you might engage in the mediation process, spend hours, maybe days, you know, doing a mediation, and you might end up without an agreement. I mean, it is not foolproof. I mean, there's going to be some opportunities where that doesn't happen. You're always going to have someone that will not comply maybe with the agreement. I mean, it is a minimum, but that's the possibility. And people say, well, I went through all these expenses, time, put all this effort into it, and now I'm just like I was the day, you know, when this all started. And that's always, I mean, that is always a possibility. I also always tell people, and this is now with the, my attorney hat on, I guess, every time, particularly for cases that are already in the court system, or it's something like malpractice or an employment discrimination case or something you think that potentially might reach the court, every time you sit to talk, there is a risk that, you know, maybe some information will come out and it might not be a good one. And I've had cases where, with attorneys present at the mediation table, where one of the parties has figured out that the case, the statute of limitations has expired. They don't have a case. And they find out through the mediation. Well, maybe they could have found it out somewhere else. Maybe along the lines. Who knows? Maybe. So there's always, I mean, everything has a risk. I just think that the benefits far outweigh the risk. I've also had cases where that has happened. This actually has happened to me in 3 cases, where the employer said, well, you know, this is way, you know, you can't even file this in court already. Statute of limitations are up. You're done with. However, I'm still willing to help you out. So it decreases the barriers when you're talking with someone and you have them there on a one-on-one. It's mm-hmm. not just now this employee number 2530, you know. He actually now has a family, you know what's going on. So it creates that interpersonal rapport. And I've also had cases that in spite of the statute of limitations having, you know, expire already and they can't do anything in court, the employer saying, but I actually recognize that this is wrong. And so we need to do something about it. So, of course, are all employers like that? No. But, you know, there's always a chance that you can mm-hmm. get something accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, we've covered so much here about what mediation is and some of the benefits and challenges. So, also, especially since you moved from Puerto Rico and you've already mentioned a few international instances, mm-hmm. what are some of the cultural or ethnic factors that should really be considered in mediation?
I think that's one of the key aspects. I actually believe, and I know other people might believe differently, but I really do believe what is conflict to start with? I think it's culturally and socially constructed. So even to begin with, my definition of what is conflict coming from Puerto Rico might be totally different from what a conflict is from someone from Omaha, someone from Iraq, someone from Africa. So it's what is conflict to begin with, I think. I don't think it's determined by culture, but I do think it's shaped by it. So I wouldn't go as far as saying that it's deterministic. I think people always have the opportunity to change and to approach conflict in a different way, but it significantly shapes and defines what conflict is. And when you ignore that, there's a big risk that as a mediator, you're not conducting the process in a way that is beneficial to parties. And to give you an example, one of the big issues with the problem-solving methodology is that it focuses on individual interests. So it moves people from their positions to what they believe their interests are. Of course, the interests are very individual, and it comes from a little bit from the psychology, you know, psychology background where you're focusing on you as an individual. But that's a very Western worldview. People are more individualistic in the United States, and that's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It's just the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
In the Caribbean, Africa, and other countries, we tend to be more collective. So for while as for maybe family mediation, the important thing is how can I as a parent comply with my son and taking him to particular times and how that's going to fit in with my professional career, which is a big thing that this usually happens, particularly with the woman, who there's still some expectancy, although that has been changing, that, well, you take care of the kids and, you know, and that type of thing. So how, you know, you need to also do your part so I can continue to further my career after this divorce. And that might be a decision taken by just those parents. In more collective societies, you would have to include probably grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to include family members. It's not so much about me. It's about the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of issues, a lot that has been written about that. How do we address those issues within the mediation setting? And of course, it gets more complicated because I think globalization has had an impact not only on the economy and politics, but also on culture. We live all around the world. We're influenced all over. You know, it's just we're having influences from every single culture. And I can share an example with you. A few months ago, I was doing an interview for a project I was working on, and it was to interview someone that was not an American native, you know, like American U.S. citizen, American brought up in the U.S. kind of thing, to see how they would see conflict. My first question was, what culture do you identify with to this person? Well, this person had been born and raised in Cuba up until the age of 15. When she was 15, they moved to the United States. She went to undergrad in the United States, lived in the East Coast, Florida for a while, and now she's in the Midwest. And it was really hard for her to answer. She said, after thinking, she said, well, that's a very difficult question. And after thinking for it a while, she said, I guess if I had to identify myself with one culture, it would be Hispanic American with Cuban roots. And her take on that was, I was brought up as a Cuban. My entire family is Cuban. I have all this culture embedded in me. She said, but my professional development was in the U.S., so I tend to be a lot more American when I'm doing work-related matters. But then, because I'm a Cuban and Hispanic, I do have a lot of relationships with Mexicans, with Puerto Ricans, with people from Central America, and they have influenced the way I do certain things at the community level.
Mm.
So it's really hard to, you know, so, but all of those things are issues that I think if the mediator wants to be effective in whatever the solution at the end of the day is, you really need to address, because when you're talking to someone from a different culture and they're not quite getting it, it's like talking a foreign language. It really is. I mean, mm-hmm. the best you can explain is like, why would they do that? Why are they thinking? It's a different way of seeing the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are big issues that need to be addressed in our particularly in the United States, where there's so many people from different cultures.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're saying you start with the awareness that culture is an issue in the process, and you need to keep your eyes open for that, eyes and ears open.
eyes, ears open, the more you read, the more you, and it's even the way the mediation is structured. And another short example would be, some cultures tend to be more non-linear in the way they talk. If we're together in a room with, I don't know, five Cubans or five Puerto Ricans or five people from the Caribbean, we're all going to be talking at the same time. And yet we're all following and understanding what everyone else is saying. That would be considered rude in certain places of the United States and maybe other countries as well. Because mm-hmm. First one person speaks, then the other person speaks, and that's just the way it's done. Well, not with other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an experience of a mediation I was doing in Venezuela once, and I was taken there by the embassy of the United States, and they wanted me to structure this mediation with people having turns to talk. And I told them that that's just not going to work. You know, if I'm going to do it, I'm not going to do it that way. Because one, either they're just going to go through the process being really passive aggressive and not really engaged, or two, they're just going to walk out. And so we can't do it that way. And so there's, you know, little issues like that would actually impact how the mediation is performed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it sounds vital. Absolutely. Well, let's see. I think maybe one final kind of thought here, since this is for counseloraudiosource.net, mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe you could talk some about skills, counseling kinds of skills that would be useful in mediation, and maybe some recommendations for counselors who might be interested in being involved in as a mediator.
Definitely. Like I think I mentioned a little bit of it before, that we do draw upon a lot of the interviewing skills, particularly for the pre-mediation stage. So it's experience, I guess. I mean, you go through it, but there's a lot of that interviewing skill processes that the mediators need to have, and that's why we have it as a requirement in many of our classes. Depending on your style of mediation, like, for example, the narrative mediation approach draws a lot on White and deconstruction and narrative therapy. So if that's a style you want to engage into, that is something you need to look into. Again, not to resolve issues in terms of deep psychological problems, but the strategy that will be followed in the mediation.
Mm-hmm.
So those are skills that are really important. Just being able to read people non-verbally, it's a big issue also mm-hmm. that I know psychologists are trained to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big issue is not only what is said, but what is not said. And those, again, I think are strategies that psychologists are big on, depending. Again, psychology has the same problem, though. I mean, there's so many counselors. There's so many different models and ways of doing mm-hmm. things, so it's mm-hmm. really hard to pinpoint in the counseling department as well as to, you know, what would be appropriate and how should we approach things. But I know that's a big thing. Also, I think the sequence of how things are set, some of the counseling and psychology and counseling strategies deal a lot with what is the sequence of what is the person saying, and it makes a difference. So there's a lot of analysis in terms of sentence structure and idea structure, I guess. That's a skill I have found to be very helpful in the mediation process.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you a lot with the reality checklist, that you really think you should do this. It helps you a lot to also deal with hidden agendas that people might have. I mean, mm-hmm. mediation is fine, but people do come defensive to the table. Some people do have hidden agendas, some people, mm-hmm. and so I think this effective communication, how to reflect to people back what they're saying, skills such as summarizing. I mean, how do you summarize? When do you summarize? Skills such as self-reflection in terms of like listening, active listening skills. There's a lot of things that I think correlate. So counselors already have a big step, I guess, that they're ahead of the game because of that background and that training they have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say is when I've had counselors in my training workshops, and it happens the same way, we've actually had psychiatrists and psychologists when I was back home. The main problem the three of them have in mediation is they want to keep on going deeper.
Mm.
So it's a sense of when to stop. Mm-hmm. That is their big problem. They have difficulty with that because it's really hard to take your counselor hat off.
Mm-hmm.
And different professions have different issues. In terms of counselors, that's the big counselors, like wanting to take over. This is what you need, you know, this is,
oh, mm-hmm.
because that's what you're usually paid for, help you work through the process, but help your internal as well, deep, mm-hmm. you know, psychological kind of issues. And so this is the plan we're going to have for you, you know, counselors, this is what we're going to do. Well, you do need to leave, you know, some space to people to do a little bit of that on their own. And that's, again, depending on your style, but that's one issue I've confronted with counselors, psychologists, and psychiatrists that have taken our workshop when I was in Puerto Rico. And attorneys have other problems. They want to go to the facts and the law, and they don't allow for, you know, going a little bit. I actually see it of sort of like, you know, how onions are, you know, they have their different pills. I would say, if you look at the law, attorneys and professions that are more focused on the legal aspect, they're really working on this exterior side. This is what the law says, this is what you can do. I think mediators are sort of in the middle of the road. You know, you're not going to do anything illegal, but I'm not, but we can do more than that. You don't have to abide to all these strict rules.
So you've told us a lot today about mediation, and I wonder if you have any final thoughts about how counselors might learn about mediation, or if they're interested in learning more about mediation.
Sure. I think counselors do have an advantage due to their background in terms of some skills they'll already have perfected or perfection. I mean, it's just, you know, because of their background. And I think it's a fascinating field. I think they can use it not only as part of what they do regularly, but sometimes counselors don't necessarily want to engage into all the what it entails. They might want to do something different as well. So I think it's a skill. It's transferable to your settings, being aware of other issues. And sometimes, even though it's information you already know, it teaches you how to see it from a different perspective. And that's always helpful. So there's a lot of books, references, websites that I can definitely provide to you for that. And if they want to know a little bit of more information, then they can access those websites or read the books on the different methods and theories. This is I have sort of oversimplified everything for purposes of the interview, but I mean, for each of these topics you could probably be talking for days.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can take them as in-depth or as superficial as you really want to. So I think it's a wonderful skill to have. I think it not only helps in the work setting, but it also works at the family, community, relationships overall. And I would, you know, recommend that they actually take a look a little bit at it with a different open mind, being very aware that it's not the same as counseling.
Great.
Have any other questions?
Great. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with us today and teaching us about mediation. We, all of us at CounselorAudioSource.net, appreciate your information. And good talking to you, Professor Funk-Guzman.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
You've just heard an interview with Professor Jacqueline Font-Guzman regarding mediation, principles, and practices. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at CounselorAudioSource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.